And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
T-minus 56 days until the start of another NHL season. It's time for another episode of NHL Fantasy on Ice, where today we're going to tackle some player debates and, most importantly, the top 250 player rankings heading into the 26-27 NHL season. Hoping you're having a great summer. Nick Alberga, Jay Conn, Chris Meany, and Pete Jensen with you. What's going on, Jake? How are you, bud?
Not too much, Nick. Always great to be with the boys in the middle of summer here. The quiet part of the NHL offseason right now. Things have died down a little bit, but that doesn't mean we can't talk a little fantasy hockey here. We're not that far away from getting those draft dates ready and starting to talk to your league mates a little bit. So it's not all that far away. Good to chat with you boys here today.
Fired up. Jacked up means there are rumors going around that you almost missed your wedding, almost missed the altar because you were doing the rankings for fantasy here.
Yeah, just before D walked down the aisle, I was juggling a couple people inside the top 250. But jokes aside, we're here into August. As you said, we're inching closer to puck drop. You know, the season starts a little earlier this year, so drafts will get underway a little earlier. And really looking forward to this episode and just debating some of the top players in the NHL with you guys.
Yeah, so firstly, I want to give you and Pete the floor in terms of how you put together the top 250 rankings.
Yeah, we went a little deeper this year, right, Pete? You know, there's a lot of people that are playing in dynasty leagues and keeper leagues and, you know, playing with 12-plus people. So we really tried to take care of the people playing in 14, 16, 18-team leagues. I hear you guys out there. So pretty deep, top 250. A little bit deeper in terms of just the top 100 forwards are going around 150, deeper among defensemen and goalies too. So, yeah, you know, Pete can kind of address what we rolled through. But, you know, we talk a lot on this podcast, category coverage players, guys that not only put the puck in the net and get the assists, but shots, right, Pete? Hits, blocks, really focus on some of those guys that can touch all categories.
Right, for sure. So these rankings do count hits. They count block shots. They count shots on goal for goalies. They count wins, GAA, save percentage, and shutouts. And again, this is a cool episode because even fast forward to September, you could listen back to this episode as a refresher. A lot of things that we talk about on today's show will not change, like a debate of who would you rather have, Matthew Tkachuk or Brady Tkachuk or Darren Radish and John Carlson. We're going to get to all those things based on off-season movers and also teammates left behind and compare everybody in contrast.
Yeah, it really has been a very polarizing NHL offseason. I think we'll start, guys, with a debate. I'll hand things off to Jake here about the first overall pick. It seems like an annual debate here on this podcast, and I will say this is as close as ever as I am to not picking Connor McDavid first overall for a multitude of reasons, among them Mike Babcock now in the mix here with the Edmonton Oilers, and I feel much more stronger about the potential of like a MacKinnon or a Kucherov. And Pete, I'll give you your day as well. How about a Celebrini in the mix as well here, Jake, for number one overall?
This is the annual debate here, guys. I remember last year, I believe it was me and Nick on Team McDavid and Meany and Pete on Team MacKinnon. Now, both were really solid. We expect both to be solid again, but it does feel like MacKinnon was the play last year. Looking back, heck, maybe even Kucherov with the season that he had, if we want to take it further past these top two, Meany. But once again, here we are debating McDavid, debating MacKinnon. You guys have McDavid at one, Meany. That did surprise me a little bit, just based on how in you guys were on MacKinnon last year. You did the sales pitch to me. You did the sales pitch to Nick. Why McDavid over MacKinnon means going into this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, these guys are in a tier by themselves. It would be tier one, McDavid and MacKinnon, and then you guys mentioned Celebrini. I think Celebrini now has jumped Leon Draisaitl for me. He's right there with Kucherov, but they're in that same tier. But the second tier, I think it just depends on your settings. You know, McDavid, if you were playing in a league with power play points, he had 54 of them. He was just ahead of MacKinnon. If you're playing in a league that adds a little bit more value to shots on goal, right, then maybe you can lean with Nathan MacKinnon given the shot volume, Nick, that he's going to have. But you can't go wrong with either of these two guys. I think we can talk throughout this episode of what the plan is when it comes back to you for round two and round three. Because once you pick one of these guys, Nick, you certainly have the edge on the rest of your league mates, but you're not going to pick again for about 20, 24 picks.
You're right, and ideally I like category coverage, and certainly all the names at the top will provide that, but Macklin Celebrini, the season he just had, I just wonder about his ceiling, Pete, and that's why, again, I think his name is firmly entrenched in this conversation. Do you agree with that?
I think he should be taken in the top five overall, and I think eventually, a year or two from now, maybe three, we're going to be talking about and comparing him to the likes of Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon. Just to kind of play devil's advocate a little bit, I kind of still lean MacKinnon. There's a lot to like about his category profile compared to McDavid, and some concerns, of course, like we talked about last year about the Edmonton Oilers, maybe even more so now, but MacKinnon led the league in goals last year with 53, first time he's done that. Also led the league in even strength goals, even strength points, shots on goal, and was third in the league in points. We know that ceiling's just as high as anybody else, and I just kind of still like the Colorado Avalanche, their top-heavy group, more than the depth of the Edmonton Oilers.
I think the name I was most fascinated to look to on the rankings was Macklin Celebrini, guys, because obviously sky's the limit for this kid. We saw what he was able to do last year, and now he's inserted himself into this conversation. And I've been wondering, anytime I think of fantasy hockey, how high is too high now to draft Macklin Celebrini? What would the reach be now? Means you guys have him at four here on the list. I would probably have him at four as well. I think Kucherov, I think MacKinnon, I think McDavid. I feel like these guys deserve to be in that top three tier, with Macklin Celebrini kind of not at the door. So in terms of a rankings list, I think four is completely fair. Is it crazy to think you could take him over a Kucherov or a MacKinnon or a McDavid, or is four probably as high as you'd go for Macklin Celebrini?
It's high as I would go. I mean, Kucherov has just done this consistently, right? He's probably done his prime years, but he's still so elite, where, you know, McDavid and MacKinnon are still in their prime. And, you know, Pete mentions the even strength stuff and the shots on goal, and I think that's huge. I think the 97 even strength points MacKinnon had was the most since Jagr, like 20 some odd years ago, roughly. So it was a really good season for him, but the shot volume is there. But, you know, with Celebrini, it's the unknown, right, Nick? Like, how good can this kid be? And I think we saw a little bit of that during the Olympics, stepping up right away, elite during, you know, the Olympics with amazing players. And now you look at the Sharks team and, you know, say what you want about Trouba and Nurse, but they're a better squad. This year heading in, they are better than last year. They have some better players on the back end. So, and the offense is a little bit higher too. So it should be a good season for him. But yeah, four, I think. I don't think I can go ahead of Cooch and the top two guys, Nick.
I'm with you on that front. There are two players heading into this fantasy season where I just have no idea what their ceiling is. Number one, Macklin Celebrini. Number two, Matthew Schaefer. And I think there's so much intrigue because of how young these guys are. We're going to get into D momentarily, but I want to get into the most fascinating combo for me every year in fantasy hockey because of the volatility of the position. Goaltending. So you guys have Vasilevsky, the highest-ranked goaltender. Can't dispute that at 13. Logan Thompson at 26. Hellebuck at 27. Sorokin, 28. Ottinger, 41. Your top five. Jake, we'll start with you. How do you plan to approach goaltending in your drafts this season? But you know, because I have the same combos every year in my drafts. Like, it's enticing when you look at these big names, but the position is so damn volatile, Jake.
I'm not going to waver off of my usual strategy unless something falls in my lap, guys. I will be avoiding goaltenders in the early part of the draft as I like to stack, you know, whether it's a high-end defense, but we can get into some of those names. Obviously, we know the crew now, Makar, Hughes, Werenski. You mentioned Matt Schaefer as well. Maybe he wants to insert himself in that conversation. I'll take one of those guys and maybe two or three forwards. Okay, have I been burned before, Meanie, going with this strategy and looking for goaltenders all season? Yes, I have, but it's my strategy. It's kind of what I usually stick with. But in terms of rankings, I think Vasilevsky as the top goaltender is fair. If I am looking at one, if I were somebody that wanted to draft a goaltender early, Vasilevsky would probably be the guy. I kind of know what I'm going to get from him. I'm a little more unsure of what's going on in Winnipeg with Connor Hellebuck right now. Is he even going to be playing in Winnipeg all season? There's all these sorts of conversations. I think Vasilevsky, you know what you're going to get. So I understand why you guys have him at number one on your goalie ranks here.
I'm the same way as you. I mean, I don't want to take a goalie in the top two or three rounds. You're really missing out on some elite goal scorers. Like, for example, Nick, you mentioned Vasilevsky at 13, right? Are you going to take him over, you know, some of the defensemen, Werenski, Hughes? How about, you know, Suzuki, Natchez, Wyatt Johnson? These are really good players. Then you go down the board into to the late 20s with Thompson, Hellebuck, and Sorokin. You're missing out on some snipers and Cutter Gauthier, Kyle Connor, Tage Thompson, Dylan Gunther. So I'm going to wait it out a little bit. The one goalie out of the four that I just mentioned that I really like has actually been the number one goalie in each of the last two seasons in points leagues is Logan Thompson. This guy doesn't seem to get the credit. Washington Capitals is one of the most improved teams. Like, the defense is solid. They're going to get the he's going to get the run support. So if I'm going to reach on a goalie, Pete, in the first three or four rounds, Logan Thompson's going to be my guy.
Super efficient last year, even when they missed the playoffs. And now, like you said, is there a better, bigger beneficiary of teammate offseason moves than Logan Thompson across the league? I don't know that there is, guys. Come up with another name to dispute me here.
Really can't. Jake, I don't know about you. Like, I think he's not the name that has a sex appeal, but I think you look at the Capitals, how strong that team is, how well coached they are. They just seem to be ready to take that next step, maybe compete for the Metro Division crown, in my opinion. I think they're that strong, and I think when you look at their backbone, it's certainly Logan Thompson. And I think it creates, in general, goaltending-wise, guys in fantasy hockey, creates so many debates. And Pete brought up this good one in our chat the last couple days pertaining to the Atlantic Division. Jake, I'll throw things to you first. Sergei Bobrovsky, who's the 15th ranked netminder here by NHL Fantasy, or Jacob Markstrom, who's back with the Florida Panthers, the 10th ranked goalie, and rest assured, the team that everybody's going to talk about going into training camp is the Florida Panthers here. Who do you got there?
I think I like the Panthers more as a team going into this season. I think they're the more complete team. But when I'm looking at goaltenders, guys, just the durability of Sergei Bobrovsky, I know he's getting older, but he has proven that he could play the full season. And that's kind of what I'm looking for. There's just not too many of these goaltenders out there. But basically, everybody comes with an injury risk at this point, and Markstrom would be included in that. So that would probably be my biggest concern here when debating those two goaltenders. And I do think, as much as the Leafs, I believe, have a low floor, I think they have a very high ceiling. If everything does click, I could see them getting back to being that top three team in the Atlantic Division. I think there's enough there for me to buy on the ceiling of Sergei Bobrovsky, Nick.
Look, firstly, I got to say, these Leafs-colored glasses, I know I host Leafs Morning Take. I'm chucking out my window here in Miami, okay? I'm just basing this on what Jake said because I concur. Durability is a big thing for me, means, and I have no clue what Jacob Markstrom is at this point in his career. I know Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be 38 when the season starts, but I think that's the one thing the Leafs are buying here is a guy who's durable, 50 plus starts in five straight seasons. So I'd take Bobrovsky over Markstrom. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. And, you know, I'm not going to be reaching on either one of these guys, right? I mean, I play in a lot of leagues with Leaf fans. Like, there's no chance I'm going to be taking Bobrovsky around five or six. And I feel kind of the same way about Markstrom, right? He's linked to the Florida Panthers. That's a goalie, Pete. You're asking, is there a goalie that's set up to have more success in a new team or bringing in assets? I mean, Markstrom is a guy. He played on a Devils team that had, you know, a lot of issues defensively. Now he goes to a squad where he's probably not going to see a lot of rubber, like 20-plus shots a game. Really is what the Florida Panthers allow just over that. So I probably lean with Markstrom, but again, what we talked about earlier, maybe in that range, I'm kind of bypassing some of these goalies. I don't mind maybe a Jesper Wallstad inside the top 10. I think Jeremy Swayman is a little bit underrated, had a fantastic season last year for the Bruins. Carolina goalies and Brandon Bussey in around that range as well. Say what you want about the Hurricanes and their goaltending issues over the past couple of years, but all that guy did last year was win hockey games. So I think in a vacuum, probably give me Markstrom, but those are two goalies, Nick, I don't really want to reach on.
One spot at the back end of the top 20, guys, that really fascinated me about the rankings. I'm looking at 17 and 18. You could extend it to 19 as well, but 17, you have Austin Matthews, and 18, you have Jack Hughes. Nick, I feel like this could be the value, the high ceiling play range of the top 20. Obviously, we know the tag that comes with Jack Hughes, and you can get into that side of it, but I feel like Austin Matthews at 17 has a very high ceiling. Again, we know there's been an injury tag here recently, but either of those guys have interest to you where you feel like if they can play 82 games, they have first-round value, and we're seeing them ranked here at the back end of the top 20.
It's such a massive if for both these guys. By now, doing this podcast for a variety of years, we all know how I feel about Jack Hughes, an amazing player, but he has not proven the ability to play 82 games, now an 84-game stretch. Ditto for Austin Matthews. I think of the two, here means I'd probably lean Austin Matthews. Like, I think if there's one year to maybe go all in on Matthews, it's this year. We're going to find out what he is. Was it a Craig Berube thing now with Jim Hiller in the mix, the familiarity from back in the day being the assistant? And I think we're going to find out in short order if Austin Matthews can get back to that guy who was a top 10 fantasy guy, even top five for a while there. So I would go with Austin Matthews ahead of Jack Hughes, but I feel highly about both players. It's just more injury concerns for me.
Yeah, and it's fair, and that's why we have them ranked where we do. I mean, if we're taking the injury setting off in NHL 26, I mean, these guys are right there after the top five that we talked about. That's the ceiling. After the Olympic break, 41 points in 25 games for Jack Hughes. Only McDavid had more, and it was one more. That's the ceiling that he shows. And Matthews still has that 50-plus goal ceiling as well. Maybe rejuvenated this year, as long as health is on his side. This is a guy that I would expect to be top five in the NHL in goals and shots. And I'll say this, these two players, I'm very comfortable taking them in the second round. I think they could be league winners if you get them in the second. That's a huge win. But at the same time, these guys I'm seeing are going early in the first. They're still first round picks. They're still late first round picks. Jake, there is a little bit of high risk, high reward there. But if either one of them pan out, they again could be league winners. I'll lean with Matthews because I typically lean with volume shooters and goal scorers.
One thing I want to add about Matthews, I'm very excited. I don't normally wear those Maple Leafs goggles or glasses, whatever you want to call them. I'm excited about the Maple Leafs power play one this year with Willie Nylander, Matthews, McKenna, Darren Radish. Remember, they had barely any power play goals from defensemen last year. Radish had 10 on his own playing for Tampa. And then, oh yeah, John Tavares, who's a veteran but can still hang with the best of them around the league. So I'm looking at the Maple Leafs power play top unit, potentially a top five PP1 in the whole league and a ceiling of being number one outright. So that's what I'm talking about with Matthews, who, by the way, if you go back to the lockout, you know, the 05-06 season till now, he is the player with the highest goal ceiling. He had 69 goals just a couple of years ago in 23-24. So the ceiling is enormous with him. I'd go with him over Jack Hughes.
Pete, I want to stay in the Atlantic Division. I build this the Pete Jensen debate. And so Brady Tkachuk, now a member of the Florida Panthers. Brady Tkachuk has been a staple of every Pete Jensen fantasy team ever. Brady Tkachuk, you got him ranked 20th overall. You got Matthew Tkachuk at 24th overall. Pete, I'll hand things off to you, but I'll start. I like Brady Tkachuk just for the category coverage, I should say. I view Matthew Tkachuk as more of a Kawhi Leonard now in the NHL, where load management is going to be a thing. He's played a lot of hockey the last little while. And I would not be shocked, Pete, if Brady Tkachuk has that type of season his brother had in year number one coming over from Calgary to Florida.
Right, yeah, there's a lot of appeal with both of these players. If you're going to take them in the third round, depending on when they fall, of course, Brady has that elite, unmatched category profile that you could take him at 10, you could take him at 15 or 20, and you're going to have a gold mine. Last year, I had him in that YouTube draft. He missed a little bit of time, but once he came back, it was like ran away with the thing. You know, that's the potential, and that's the luxury you have when you have Brady Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk, the point ceiling is higher, but again, it's a very deep outlook for the Florida Panthers. This is a team I'm definitely stacking throughout my fantasy drafts this year. And for Brady Tkachuk, I do think the goal scoring ceiling is higher. You always see him up there in high danger shots. I think he's scoring 45 plus goals this year in his first year with the Panthers.
This debate strictly comes down to categories for me, guys. If you're in one of those bangers leagues, it's certainly Brady Tkachuk. I think if you're not, if you're just in a strictly very simple points type league, I still think that there's some value on Matthew Tkachuk. I understand the amount of hockey that he's played, but again, I'm always willing to buy into that ceiling and that hope that, okay, you could play close to 84 games now, we have to remember, in a National Hockey League season. So I'd be willing to take a little bit of a shot there, it means. But I am concerned about drafting players, whether it's from the Panthers, or we talked about the Capitals earlier, with these really strong rosters that should be great hockey teams. Are they going to be good fantasy teams is my question, or are things going to be a little bit too spread out to truly attack those types of teams?
It's a good point, because it's not a lock that Brady's going to be on the power play. We can all sit here and think, okay, he should be, right? You got Barkov there that can run five forwards. You know that Reinhardt's going to be there, and Matthew Tkachuk. Is Verhaeghe, Bennett, Marchand, are these guys going to get opportunities on PP1? I'd say to Matt, yeah, absolutely. They probably will throw it the year, and I think you nailed it. If you're playing in a league with shots and hits and penalty minutes, Brady is going to go at the end of the first or early second in those formats. He's the only player over the last 5 years to have at least 300 points, 1,000 shots, and 800 hits, but I think Matthew does have the higher ceiling. I would be a little surprised if Brady did have a 100-point season. We've seen that twice from Matthew. He was first in the Panthers in points per game last year in a very small sample size. There's a lot of injury risk with these two guys as well. I have no issue taking either of them in the first couple rounds of my draft. They're probably my favorite two Florida Panther players to target after Reinhardt.
Boys, I'm always on trade watch. I sit here on August 4th what's going on with Dylan Larkin? What's going on with Kirill Marchenko? And the reason why I bring that up, we look at the top 250 rankings. Who can benefit more from a trade, Jake? For me, it's Dylan Larkin. Right now, ranked 68th. I could Minnesota, Montreal, list your team. If he goes somewhere else that's not Detroit, I think swiftly he bolts into the top 50 in fantasy hockey. Whereas like a Marchenko, already ranked 52. I don't know what to make of the Columbus Blue Jackets. I'm not sure how much he can rise in terms of fantasy ranking. What do you think?
Feels like things have settled down in Columbus, at least for the time being, but still a lot of speculation going on right there. And I'm mostly referencing the Zach Werenski situation, where it feels like both sides are playing nice now, and we can rank Zach Werenski like we normally would going into a season. It sounds like he's going to be playing in Columbus. Marchenko could be another story. I'm hoping something gets solved here, Meany, on the Dylan Larkin front. Obviously, we know now Detroit's had a change at the management position, and Steve Yzerman's out, so they sort of have to figure that situation out, maybe before they can actually make a Dylan Larkin trade. Nick mentioned a couple spots I'd love to see him go. Minnesota, Montreal, a couple teams that really need a center. You could talk about maybe in LA, a couple of other spots too, where I look, they could really use a Dylan Larkin down the middle of the ice, but he'd certainly get a huge bump up basically wherever he goes, right? I can't think of a team that outside of Detroit that he could play on where he wouldn't get a bump up in these rankings, because the one thing I'm sure of in the Atlantic, guys, is I don't think Detroit's going to be very good. The rest of the teams, it's all up in the air, but Detroit's the one team I feel pretty certain won't be in the playoff conversation in the Atlantic.
They don't really have a lot outside of, you know, DeBrincat and Raymond, right? And in terms of fantasy offensive players that will help other guys out. So, you know, we're doing some of these 32 and 32 team previews and projecting, you know, the Minnesota Wild, and we have three guys inside the top 12, Kaprizov at 7, Boldy at 10, which may be aggressive, but I do feel like that's a 50 goal scorer. We're seeing the trajectory of him. And then Quinn Hughes at 12. After that, you know, it's pretty thin in terms of the Minnesota Wild. Who's going to be the number one center for the Wild? Is it going to be Hartman? You're off. Like, there's a lot of question marks. So I think if he went to Mini, it would help out some of those other players, and certainly it would help his stock out. If he went to LA, I'm big on Quentin Byfield this year. I think he's going to get a real opportunity up on that top line with Kempe and Panarin, but that would probably bump him down to line two. And as for Marchenko, I mean, Nick, I think he's just – maybe he's just locked in for the Blue Jackets right now, and he's that team is going to be very top-heavy, and we have him ranked aggressively as well. He's just an all-around good player with Werenski, with Fantilli. Those are really three good players in the Blue Jackets that can help that power play all year long.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think somebody's got to get that puck in Columbus, and if Marchenko stays there, I think the fantasy value is certainly going to be there. And guys, we talk about Detroit, Pete. Some housekeeping from the last time we did a podcast. Patrick Kane goes back home to Chicago. I can't believe he didn't go to a team that actually has a chance of winning the Stanley Cup in the next couple of years. Like, I think Chicago's on the upswing. I'm still waiting for the next step. They get Bo Byram. Frondell's going to be in the league full-time next year. But you still have your concerns or wonders about that team, especially with Bedard starting the season injured. How do you feel about Patrick Kane going back to Chicago, Pete? Is there any fantasy value to zap from that? Because even last year, he was a guy that you would probably loosely deploy to begin with.
I mean, he had pretty good numbers last year. When you go back and look at it, he was not that far off a point a game. Did miss some time for the Red Wings, but finished with 57 points in 67 games. Was not always on their first power play. Now he certainly will be. And you could also make the argument, this is the appeal of drafting Patrick Kane this year. He's going to get a lot of garbage points early, middle, and late in the season. He will take on a bigger role when Connor Bedard is out for the first month or so. And then when Connor Bedard comes back from that shoulder surgery injury, they could potentially play on the same line, which could be an electric offensive duo. So this is why you might take a late round flyer on Patrick Kane. Of course, he's not a player you take through the first 12 rounds of your draft anymore. But if you are taking Bedard early as a potential draft bargain, if he slips outside the top 50 in a non-keeper league, and then, oh yeah, throw Patrick Kane potentially on his line for a late round stack, that's not a bad fantasy strategy. I also really like Frondell, what he did last year, 9 points in his first 12 NHL games. So maybe when Bedard comes back, like, something might be brewing for the Blackhawks as a sleeper team, and Spencer Knight always kind of keeps them afloat, or at least he did last year.
I don't have too much interest. I think it would, what Pete said, it would be a late round pick. I think ultimately it does help the outlook of Bedard when he's fully healthy, Frondell, Bowen Byram on the back end, because you know what Kane can bring to the table on the power play. So he'll probably help out some of those other guys if you have some Hawks in a dynasty league. I think it's good short-term value. How about another guy that, you know, Leo Carlson, that's the big thing. I think we finished recording and then Leo signed that big contract. Well, I guess the offer sheet. We have him ranked pretty aggressively. I'm seeing him go in best ball drafts around round five, round six. I know in those formats people want to get wingers, but we have them, Jake, around pick 34. We have Dylan Gunther, Mark Scheifele, Tage Thompson, Kyle Connor, some elite shooters, goal scorers, Jake Gensel, Brendan Hagel, Sam Reinhart. So some good players in there. I really liked what I saw from Leo Carlson last year in his third season and into the postseason. He seemed like a volume shooter, wasn't afraid to shoot the puck and attack. What's his ceiling look like? And do you think he's a target for you?
I think he's a complete stud. I think that at some point we're talking about him maybe entering that first, second round conversation in fantasy drafts. Might not be this year, but I think that's coming down the pipe for Leo Carlson. Look, is $18 million too much for him right now? Yeah, it is. I think we can all safely agree on that. But I don't think he's going to be too far off that in a few years, guys, with where the cap's going. I think we're going to be talking about him as probably a $15 million-ish dollar player anyways. So I don't think we're going to be too far off on that contract. And as for Fantasy Nick, I do have a lot of interest. I am concerned, though, maybe the Ducks do take a bit of a step back. I don't necessarily love what Pat Verbeek has done throughout the course of this summer. It feels like they've lost more players. There's not a lot coming in here to Anaheim. So it is going to be up to the Leo Carlsons, the Cutter Gauthiers, if they can get him inked to a deal to really lead this thing in Anaheim.
I love Leo Carlson, but I'm not reaching for Leo Carlson this season. There's been so many different examples, guys, of players who signed mega contracts, never mind the fattest ticket in hockey before the Celebrini deal went down, and lived up to expectation. I'm probably passing on Leo Carlson this coming season. I just don't see a pathway, Jake, where he lives up to the expectation of that contract, the fantasy ranking. No, thank you.
And there's some interesting names if we want to go below Leo Carlson in your guys' rankings here. Meany that really jumped out to me. You got William Nylander down there at 44. Mm-hmm. Sidney Crosby still getting it done at his age. Are we skeptical that Pittsburgh can do what they did last season? I think I am. We'll see where you guys fall on that. But he's there at 45. That just shows you the depth of talent in this league. We're talking about guys like Nylander and Crosby in that mid-40s range. And Nick, maybe you'd rather go for players like that than take Leo Carlson, you know, 10, 11 spots higher, right?
Hey, it got me thinking, Jake. Every time you bring up Sidney Crosby, and I wanted to throw this to Pete to begin with, Alex Ovechkin, 87-year-old Alex Ovechkin, back for another NHL season. You guys have him ranked around 100. He had 32 goals, 32 assists last season. Do you think he's a guarantee, Pete, for like 25 and 25? Is he a third-line power play merchant at this point in his career? How would you attack Alex Ovechkin next season?
He still brings that elite category coverage relative to the pack of players that you'll be choosing between when you're considering Ovechkin. You know, it's probably going to be for me somewhere between the 75 to 100 overall. I might reach for him a little higher than our rankings suggest, just my personal preference. He's going to be playing with great line mates. He's got the chemistry with Dylan Strome. On the other side, you could see either an Alex Tuck or a Jordan Kyrou. And again, even if his even strength minutes diminish in certain shifts, certain games, we know this could be his last season, the last go-around type thing where everybody around the league is focused on him. And I still think he's going to deliver in a big way with a 30-plus goal season here just because the supporting cast. And then he'll also give you like 100-plus hits and probably 250 shots on goal, which very few other players in the league can do.
The ranking may be unfair, but there is some uncertainty, right? I mean, all the players that they brought in, I think the one thing that we can agree on is he's a lock to be on PP1. I remember Jerome Iginla when he lost his foot speed towards the end of his career. It seemed like all he did was score on the power play, and that may just be the case for Ovechkin. But if you're not playing in the league with power play points or power play goals, heck, you don't have shots on goal or hits, you're just playing with straight points, what do we project, Jake, for Ovechkin? Is he a 65, 70-point guy? I mean, that would be a good season for him, I think.
Some of these old guys are still getting it done, guys, and he does have talent around him. I think Nick is right that he might become a third-line first power play guy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he won't have some fantasy value. You still got guys like Evgeny Malkin coming off a great season. I talked about Sidney Crosby earlier as well, so still some value in these guys that we've been talking about for, it feels like, two decades. Now, Nick, I know you wanted to mention Matt Schaefer as well, and you're fascinated about his ranking. I was, too, in thinking, how close is he to the Werenskis, the Cale Makars, the Quinn Hugheses of the world? I don't think we could put him there yet, but are we a year away from talking about Matt Schaefer with those guys? Guy scored 20-plus goals in his rookie season. Are you worried at all about a sophomore slump, or do you think he's just so talented that you throw that out the window?
There's always a concern. You know what, Jake? I flew down here to Miami. I watched some Ivan Nolenka, Gretzky action, Landon DuPont, man. Get used to that name, boys, who's likely going to go first overall next year. But the reason why I bring him up, he reminds me a lot of Matthew Schaefer, and he's a righty, Matthew Schaefer to a lefty. And I think when you look at the body of work of Matthew Schaefer, like there's not really many parallels to draw in the last little while. I just think you look at his potential ceiling means more so like who's on that Islanders roster, and Schaefer was just able to grab that team by the horns and be like, you're my team in short order. And you wonder, as that team gets stronger and they acquire some players, they got Sorokin back there. I just, to answer Jake's question, I do think a Schaefer can get involved in that conversation with the best on the planet, whether it's a Makar, whether it's a Quinn Hughes, Werenski, the list goes on. I think there's always a bit of concern when it comes to a sophomore slump, but what I saw from Matthew Schaefer, I just know he's going to be a bona fide stud for many years to come here.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we really liked was the shot volume, right? He's not afraid to rip the puck. He played a ton after it took, what, game three or four for him to get well over 20 minutes a night and just get leaned on in the second half of hockey games. So we have him overall, among defensemen rather, at seven. I think that Werenski and Hughes should be in that tier with Makar. I don't think those guys ever really kind of get, it's like everyone's like Makar and then everybody else, but Werenski and Hughes, from a per game standpoint, fantasy points per game, including hits, blocks and shots, those guys were better than Makar last year. And then you have Bouchard, Hudson, Dahlin, Schaefer, and I don't think we'll see too much of a downtick from Radish, with the Leafs this year. Pete talked about the power play, so yeah, can he finish top three? I think, yeah, he's good enough, right? Jake, we have him number one among defensemen 25 or under, ahead of Hudson, and he will shoot the puck a little bit more than Hudson. But those other guys that we that I mentioned have a higher ceiling because of the supporting cast, Jake. You're most likely going to see more points from these guys, but man, Schaefer could score 30. He seems like a future 35 goal scorer, which is nuts.
I think I'm just willing to strictly buy on the ceiling here, Nick, and I know there could be speed bumps with these young players. My one concern is I don't know if the Islanders, and I'm not really knocking them for their offseason, but I don't know if there's enough in, well, is it time for the Islanders to really get aggressive yet? I think they're just happy they got Schaefer, and maybe they're going to play the waiting game and eventually they'll jump into that pool. So they're staying very patient right now. But look, let's be honest, there's not a ton of offensive talent in front of Matt Schaefer, but he proved to us last year he doesn't really need it. He can score anyways, not afraid to shoot the puck. So I think there's a lot to like with that file. And regardless of the fact I don't think there's a ton of talent around him there on Long Island, I do believe he's the goods, and I wouldn't mind drafting him really in any spot here.
About Schaefer, I mean, if he's going to take the next step to, what's the next step, 30 goals, which only a few defensemen have done in the past 20-30 years, if that's the next step and 70-80 points is the next step, I'm going to need to see a little bit more from the Islanders offense. And I'm talking about integrating some of these younger players that could have untapped potential in the next couple of seasons. Cal Ritchie, we saw some glimmers of it, not so much last year in terms of fantasy worth. You have Victor Eklund, you have Cole Yzerman coming up the pipeline whenever that day comes. We saw Eklund at the tail end of last season. Maybe he's a sleeper, could play on power play one and boost Schaefer a little bit. But they did lose Anders Lee, who is a high danger standout and a power play net front guy. So, and their power play wasn't that good even with Anders Lee. So I just worry about the supporting cast in the sophomore season around Schaefer a little bit.
Right there with you. I'd be remiss if we didn't bring up a team that went to the Final Four last year, who I think could contend for not only the Atlantic Division crown this season, but the President's Trophy means. The Montreal Canadiens. Ivan Demidov, man, like that contract is unbelievable across the board. I think they've really, really prepared themselves to be a team to be reckoned with for the next decade, 15 years. Like, I feel that strongly about Montreal. How would you attack them means in fantasy this upcoming season in terms of ranking. Nick Suzuki's coming off an incredible year. Cole Caulfield, Demidov, another year under his belt coming up. Hudson's been an absolute beast. Like, there's an embarrassment of riches, not to mention some of the guys still coming from, you know, Zarkovsky to Hage down the road too.
Yeah, I mean, the future is set up. I think they're the only team with four players in the top 12. Well, I know we'll have a keeper in Dynasty episode, but, you know, you just mentioned all those guys and they're 25 and younger, besides Suzuki, is the old vet on the squad. But, yeah, Suzuki, we have aggressively ranked. I mean, there's been progression every single year. I think this time last year, Pete called him for 100 points, and he did that comfortably last year. There could be a little regression from him and Cole Caulfield, but not too much. I think Caulfield, you know, projects as a 40-goal scorer. He's a volume shooter. He leads the NHL in goals since the start of 2 years ago. So he's an elite shooter. The two guys that I'm looking forward to from a fantasy perspective, Demidov's not going to offer a whole lot outside of the points. Hudson is just elite everywhere. What's his ceiling like? We're talking about Schaefer. Hudson, to me, has like a 95-point ceiling. And then Slavkovsky. We saw a little bit of it, Jake, in the postseason. This guy is not afraid to drop the gloves. He got smacked around a little bit by Hagel, but he's not afraid to drop the gloves, throw his body around. He led the team in power play goals. He's a net front presence on that power play. So I'm really looking forward to Slavkovsky. I think he's the guy that can really take the jump out of the guys that Nick just alluded to.
And just to go back to the goalie conversation, didn't get a chance to chime in on the debate of Markstrom versus Bob. Can I just say fade both of them and maybe invest in a tandem in the Atlantic Division, whether it's Montreal? I'd rather have Montreal's tandem than Buffalo's, but even Buffalo is like, weren't they top five in team save percentage last year with UPL and Lion? And I like this Montreal duo. I think one of the biggest fantasy value gained players from the postseason was Jakub Dobish. He had them on his back. He was a workhorse all season. And then you also have Jacob Fowler, who you could handcuff later on, and you'd really want to have that duo in a keeper league as well. We'll get to that more in the keeper episode. But just wanted to mention, I might rather lean the Montreal goalie tandem rather than investing in a workhorse older player like Bob or Markstrom.
I like it. Don't sleep on that name, Jacob Fowler. I know Dobish, as you talked about, had an incredible postseason, but the future is with Fowler, I think, too. And just so many different debates. The top 250 rankings, important to add, will change as time goes on. We talked about Larkin. We talked about Marchenko. Pete, give us an understanding of what's to come here on the podcast over the next little while. We're just starting our ascent here to September 29th and the start of the NHL season.
Right, so we got things coming up end of August. We'll have stat projections like we usually do. Our next episode, I believe, will be the lists, like sleepers, breakouts, bounce backs. Once we get into September, it's a little condensed. The season opener, I believe, is late September this year because it's an 84-game season. So, you know, in our projections, we're bumping up a couple guys by 1 or 2 points because there will be two more games in the regular season this year. So we'll also have draft bargains and fades in September and bold predictions and the betting preview. So we're getting cooking here, guys. Two episodes into the off season and a lot more to come.
Love it. NHL.com/fantasy where you can check everything out right now. For Jay Conn, Chris Meany, and Pete Jensen, I'm Nick Alberga. You've been listening to another edition of NHL Fantasy on Ice. Talk later this summer.